Today is Sunday, May 10th, Hatzaret Tfilah, learning Mishnah. We're in Masechet Rosh Hashanah. We've done already the first Mishnah and the second Mishnah of the first Perek. Today we're doing the third Mishnah of the first Perek of Masechet Rosh Hashanah. So we're going to read the Mishnah. We may not understand too much. After we read it, we'll go back and see a lot of background information that's necessary to understand the Mishnah. It says, Mishnah Gimel, Al Shisha Chodeshim Hashluchim Yotzim. Literally, on 6 months, the Shluchim Yotzim, it means the messengers, go forth. Right, the Shaliach is a messenger. And here, we're talking about messengers who take news of the new month from the Beit Din HaGadol in Jerusalem, from the Sanhedrin or from the Sanhedrin's appointees, who decided that it's the new month, and we'll talk about all this in the future, today and the weeks following. And they take that news, they didn't have telephones, they didn't have telegraphs, they take that news, runners literally, to the four far corners of the diaspora of the Jewish people to tell them that the new moon is here. When it says on 6 months the Shluchim Yotzim, it really means for the sake of 6 months. In other words, not for every one of the 12 new months of the year the Shluchim Yotzim, but only on 6 of them. For the sake of these 6, for these 6, because of these 6, the Shluchim Yotzim. And it gives us the 6. Al Nisan Mipnei HaPesach. Concerning or for the sake of or because of Nisan for Pesach. As soon as the new moon is declared by the court in Jerusalem, the first day of Nisan, the Shluchim Yotzim, and they will arrive, hopefully, to the far corners of the diaspora before Pesach to announce to the people, today is Pesach and not tomorrow.
Does this mean on 6 separate months, yes, the messengers go out at 6 different times?
For each of the 6 months.
Right.
And not for the other 6 months.
Correct. You said today and not tomorrow because it's always like that, right?
I'll explain all that. Al-Av b'pnei Atanit, on the month of, or for the month of Av, because of the Tanit. What Tanit?
Tisha B'Av. It's in the Tanakh.
Al Elul Mipnei Rosh Hashanah. We'll skip that for a second. Al Tishrei Mipnei Takanat HaMoadot. For Tishrei, for the fixing of the Moadot. And we know there's lots of Moadot in the month of Tishrei, right? There's Rosh Hashanah, there's Yom Kippur, and there is Sukkot. We'll get back to that. Al Kislev Mipnei HaChanukah. That's pretty clear, right? Ve'al Adar mipnei Hapurim. Ukshehaya Beit HaMikdash Kayam, right, when the Beit HaMikdash was in existence, Yotzim Af Aliyah mipnei Pesach Katan.
That was on Friday.
Right, what do we call today Pesach Katan? Martin.
Pesach Sheni. I'm thinking and I don't know.
So, Steve just said it, Pesach Sheni. We call it Pesach Sheni.
Does that make 7 or 6? Is it still 6?
That's a very good question. It's 6 without Pesach Sheni.
It's 7.
Then it makes 7. There are those Mefarshim that say that during the time of the Mikdash was only 6 because one of the other 6 was cancelled. They didn't go out on all the earlier 6. Which one do you think might not have been during the time of the Mikdash?
Probably Tanit.
The Tanit.
Fast.
Perhaps they didn't have Tisha B'Av during the time of the Mikdash, so it was only 5, plus the last one, Pesach Sheni, Pesach Katan, makes 6. We'll talk about that also, if it's true or not.
Yeah.
We'll have to talk. There's a lot of things to talk about here, an awful lot of things to talk about. Let's talk about, you know what, let's not talk about anything in the Mishnah. Let's go back and take the background. Let's get the background to what's going on here. So it all goes back to Pasuk in Sefer Shmot. And goodness gracious, I forgot to bring the Chumashim. So we'll run quickly and bring Chumashim. We're going to open up to Sefer Shmot.
HaChodesh
Hazeh Lechem Rosh Chodeshim Rishon Hu Lechem Lechodshei Hashanah.
Is it Yud Bet?
And that's Perek Yud Bet, Psukim Aleph and Bet. And that's going to help us understand where this whole Mishnah is coming from. Thank you. So as we're bringing the Chumashim, I'll just remember that this verse is central to our Mishnah, and this same verse was central to the previous tune, the Mishnah at the beginning of the Perek. Uh-huh. Right? The Mishnah at the beginning of the Perek, Arba Rashei Chodeshim, Arba Rashei Shanim, excuse me, uh-huh. And one of them was Nisan. How do you know Nisan is the Rosh Hashanah? Because of the pasuk that says, "Hachodesh hazeh lechem rosh chodeshim, rishon hu lechem lechodshei hashanah." So that verse is central to the first Mishnah and to the third Mishnah. So we open up to Perek Yud Bet.
Page
348. The bottom of page 348 says, "Vayomer Adonai Moshe ve'Aaron ve'eretz Mitzrayim le'mor." HaChodesh hazeh lechem rosh chodeshim, rishon hu lechem lechodshei hashanah. The pshat of the verse is that it's a poetic opening to something very important. And in poetry you have something that's called tikbolet, you have parallelism. The first part of the verse and the second part seem to say the same thing, they just use different words in parallel. First it says, HaChodesh hazeh lechem, this month, for you, uh-huh. is Rosh Chodeshim. It's the first of the months. And then it stops and says the same thing again in different language. Rishon hu lechem. It is first to you for the Chodeshei Hashanah, for the months of the year. It said the same thing. But the Midrash doesn't like, of course, to have a verse repeating itself, say the same thing twice. So the Midrash finds a different way to interpret the first half of the verse, so that the verse won't be repetitive. And that I brought for you in the sheets that we have. Look at the Mechilta, the first source we're looking at. The Mechilta says, HaChodesh hazeh lechem v'gomer. Right, this month for you, v'gomer means etc. You can see the rest of the verse. Rebbe Yishmael Omer.
What's the Mechilta again?
The Mechilta, thank you for asking, is the Midrash Tanaim al Sefer Shmot. And all Midrashei Tanaim are Midrashei Halakha.
Right.
There are no collections of Midrashei Agadah in the period of the Tanaim, so the Mechilta is Halachic, it's Tanaitic, and it's in the book of Shmot. And it says, Rabbi Yishmael Amar, Moshe hira et hachodesh leYisrael. Rabbi Yishmael says that Moshe hira, the causative of Re'e, showed the Chodesh, I won't translate that word, to Yisrael. V'amar lehem, kezeh yihyu ro'in v'kov'in et ha'chodesh l'dorot. And he said, like this, right, kezeh, like this, you will be seeing and you will be setting or sanctifying the Chodesh for all time. So now I'm going to ask a question. What does the word Chodesh mean? In the verse, the pshat seems to be month, but it doesn't mean month here.
It means new. Something like the new?
It says that Moshe showed Yisrael the Chodesh. What does the word mean?
Chodesh.
The moon, right?
Yeah, it's used in that.
In the verse, yeah. It seems to mean the month.
The month, uh-huh.
But since the months are based on the moon,
yeah.
The Midrash says the word that would mean month in the pshat of the verse, it doesn't mean that. Let's put it this way. It means that in the second part of the verse, when the second part of the verse says, Rishon hu lechem lechodshei hashanah, there the word chodesh is months. But in the first part of the verse, since the Midrash wants the verse not to be repetitive, to say something else, It says the word means something else in the first part of the verse. What it means is the moon. So let's look at the verse now. Let's go back to the verse. So the verse, according to Rabbi Yishmael, means as follows. HaChodesh hazeh lechem rosh chodeshim. This moon,
this new moon,
is to be for you the first of the month. The word chodesh, what appears a second time in the first part of the verse, means month. In other words, Moshe is pointing at the moon, and he's telling the people, when the moon looks like this, that's going to be the beginning of the month. when it appears in its first sliver, which is what we in Hebrew call the molad, the birth, language of yelid, molad, levaled. And then the second part of the verse says something different. It says, it's the first to you for the months of the year. Not only is this sliver of the moon the beginning of months, but this particular month is the beginning of the year. So there are two ideas in the verse according to the Midrash as opposed to the Pshat, which is only one idea. And then Rabbi Akiva says in the Midrash, you missed only 3 minutes. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Ze echad mishlosha dvarim, this is one of three things, shenit kasha behen Moshe, that was difficult in them for Moshe. Vehirahu hamakom et kulan, ke'ilu bet, but there's a different girsa there, and the makom, which is, who's hamakom?
Hashem.
Hashem showed, and then it's either all of them, or as if, there's a tudirkot, be'etzba, with his finger. So notice the difference between Rabbi Ishmael and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Ishmael says that what's happening is Moses is showing the Jewish people the new moon, and according to Rabbi Akiva, God is showing Moses the new moon. But in both cases, we're talking about the new moon, the thing in the sky, and we're not talking about the months of the year. The word means moon.
It may not be so far-fetched because the Yireach sometimes refers to month as well.
Yeah, I don't think it's far-fetched. In the verse, it requires that the same word means two different things.
Right.
It's a little bit problematic, but again, it does solve the problem of the repetitiousness of the verse.
So we go back. This is a context question. And the question is, on a daily basis or a periodic basis, is there a functioning calendar? And the reason for my question, absent the shlichim.
Yeah, we're going to get to it all right now. Right now. I want to now go to the 10 questions I put on the question sheet vis-a-vis this midrash. It's pretty fascinating. Look at the questions I asked. The first one we answered already. According to the straightforward, simple reading of the verse, what is the meaning of the word chodesh? That's easy. We said it means month. According to the midrash, what is the meaning of the word chodesh? We said it means
moon.
According to the midrash, what is the meaning of the phrase in which the word chodesh appears? We said that also. When the verse says, ha-chodesh hazeh lechem rosh chodeshim, it means we're pointing at the molad, the sliver of the moon, and says, the moon like this, that's what makes a new month. That's what the verse means in its first half, according to the midrash. Both according to Rabbi Yishmael and according to Rabbi Akiva. The difference between the two rabbis is quite small, as we're about to see. Question 4, we answered already, but I'll ask it just to make sure we understand. According to the Midrash, what activity or action is implied by the word zeh?
Pointing.
Oh, very good. And I guess Eric knows that it's a commonplace of the Midrash. Wherever the word zeh appears, the Midrash very often says it means pointing.
I didn't know that actually. I just
really?
Right context. That's good. Makes sense.
It means pointing. For example, remember we saw in what we just read that according to Bikiba, Moshe had difficulty, it says, with three things, and God pointed them out to him.
Shekel?
There's actually 10 of them.
Half a shekel.
Zeho ve'ko, kol, whatever it is, there's a word zen in the verse, the beginning of Kitisa. And the menorah. It also appears with tzara'at. This is the form of tzara'at. There's a number of them.
Yeah.
Our particular midrash has 3.
Uh-huh.
Very good. Now look at the next question. Question 5. According to the midrash, what mitzvah is implied by this phrase? What mitzvah is implied by this phrase?
Is it the mitzvah?
New moon.
What?
New moon.
What's the mitzvah?
Bracha on the new moon.
I'm going to say it again. You're very close. What is the mitzvah?
Is it recognizing the or acknowledging somehow the new moon?
Okay, what's it called in Hebrew?
When you go out and you look at
Kiddush HaChodesh.
Kiddush HaChodesh. It's not Birkat HaLevana, which is a mitzvah de Rabbanan, that we simply acknowledge the new moon. But the mitzvah d'oraita, and this is the first mitzvah of the Torah, at least according to Rashi, the mitzvah is Kiddush HaChodesh, the sanctification of the new moon, the declaration when the months begin, each month. And this is the first mitzvah, not just in a chronological sense, it appears here at the very beginning of the book of Shemot when the mitzvot begin, but also in a deep, deep ideological sense it's the first mitzvah. Because there's no Judaism and there's no meaning to human life unless you have a calendar, unless you have a framework of understanding how time flows, a framework of how time flows that binds a group of people together. If we all lived according to different calendars, there'd be no community. The calendar is the foundation of all community, of all sense of togetherness. And since the Jewish relationship to God is the collective relationship, it's not an individual relationship except through the collective, therefore without a calendar, there's no relationship to God. I don't want to exaggerate it too much, but it's a very, very important point. Without a collective calendar, and the truth is, that schisms within the Jewish people, when they were on the horizon about to break forth, in 9 times out of 10, there was about the calendar.
Yeah.
When is the new moon, or when is a certain holiday? How do you count? And that's what break up nations, when they start counting time in a different fashion. Right? It's no coincidence that the Muslims have their own calendar, and the Christians have their own calendar, the Jews have their own calendar. They live in three different worlds in a certain sense. At least that's the way it was until 200 years ago. Right? So the Jewish calendar has two aspects. We saw in this verse that you declare a new month at a certain point, and that a certain month is the beginning of the year. Those are the two aspects of the verse. And we said these are the two foundational mishnayot at the beginning of this masechet. The first Mishnah is about the years, when they begin, and the third Mishnah is about the months, when they begin. And each of those two aspects comes from the same verse, from different parts of the same verse. And that is a mitzvah d'oraita, to declare the new moon every month. And the mitzvah, going back to the verse, it says, HaChodesh Hazeh Lechem, Lechem, to use. It's a mitzvah on Klal Yisrael. It's a mitzvah on Klal Yisrael, and the Beit Din fulfills it as a shaliach. I didn't use that word to get you mixed up. As a representative, not as a runner in this case, but as a representative of Klal Yisrael. Okay, now, Eric said something a few minutes ago that actually points to the answer to the next question. What tension would seem to be implicit in this mitzvah? Or what question might there be in understanding the essence of the mitzvah? So let's think, what are we doing when we do the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, sanctification of the month? We say, that little sliver in the sky, that molad, that is the new month. Eric used a word earlier.
Acknowledge?
Acknowledge.
Acknowledge.
Is that the only word you can use?
There's other words.
There's other words that might mean the same thing. Are there other words that mean something different? It's similar to the question, if a tree falls in the forest and no one hears it, did it make any noise?
You're asking.
Oh, in other words, is it? Is there something... Is there something that happens metaphysically, or does it only happen when it's declared, when it's acknowledged?
Yeah, that's the idea. Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Right. And does anyone know the answer to that question in Judaism? In this particular matter?
This is lachem. Yeah, it goes out to say lachem, so it's only when it's acknowledged.
Right.
Right. Okay.
In other words, it's true that there is a moon in the sky, a sliver, a molad that appears at a certain exact time astronomically. The mitzvah, on the other hand, of Kiddush HaChodesh is not just to acknowledge that, it's rather to create a reality. And if the Jewish people don't declare the new moon, it isn't.
Uh-huh.
The new month doesn't begin until we declare it. Within a tfach, within a certain range,
yeah.
there's a two-day period that I'm going to explain in 1 minute, that if we don't declare the new moon on the first day, then the new moon is not that day, even if it did appear in the sky. It's the second day. And I'll now
that's from the Lechem. That's,
yeah. Well, no, it's not
it's
from
not,
Lechem.
It's,
the Lechem is whose responsibility it is to do the Chodesh Hazeh Lechem Rosh Chodeshim, to make it Rosh Chodeshim. It's not Rosh Chodeshim unless you make it into that. The you being the collective of Am Yisrael. Let's do a few more questions, then we're going to go back to all the astronomical and the halachic background to this. So the tension is, what actually are we doing? Are we acknowledging or are we creating a reality? And clearly, at least according to the material we're going to see, Am Yisrael is creating a reality and realize the importance of that reality. Am Yisrael decides, for example, when Pesach is. Am Yisrael decides when there's a mitzvah, bring the Korban Pesach. Am Yisrael decides when you do a mitzvah, that if you neglect to do it, you get karet. Right? That's an amazing thought. There's a Isur Hametz, right? Bal Yira Bayimatzeh on the Chag HaMatzot. When is that Isur? Am Yisrael decides.
Within the Tvach.
Within the Tvach we'll talk about. And according to the Midrash, and this comes out of what we're talking about, in a certain sense, a Kodesh Baruch Hu is dependent on Am Yisrael to know when it's forbidden to eat Chametz on Pesach. Next question. What would seem to be the disagreement between the two opinions in the Midrash? So let's go back to the Midrash. And it's a small disagreement.
Right, but it has pretty big implications, right? Because it could...
Let's hear, I don't know.
Well, according to Rabbi Yishmael, if it's Moshe that's showing Yisrael, then it could be like it's in the realm... Hashem is not in the picture.
Mm-hmm.
It's more in the realm of this world, of here, of Am Yisrael.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take Rabbi Akiva's opinion, then Hashem is involved somehow, because Hashem...
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Yeah.
That's all true. What's the pshat of the verse, Rabbi Akiva or Rabbi Yishmael? That's not a hard question. Look at the first verse of the chapter.
It has to be Rabbi Akiva.
Yeah. Right. The verse says, "V'yomer Adonai el Moshe ve'el Aaron be'eretz Mitzrayim lemor." God spoke. God said this verse. Later on, just a few verses later, Moses passes the material on to Am Yisrael. But here, it's a Kodesh Baruch Hu speaking. So if it says, "A Chodesh Hazeh Lechem Rosh Chodeshim," Chodesh Hazeh, and God's talking, it should mean that God's pointing out the new moon, how it looks with God's finger, as it were. God's taking his finger and pointing and saying, this is it, Moses, you have to get it. Look at it as this and understand. So the pshat is Rabbi Akiva. Why does Rabbi Yishmael say it's Moses talking to Israel? That's really strange.
Because that reflects the halachic interpretation? That reflects more what happens.
Right. After Moses got it from God, Moses had to pass it on to the Jewish people, but that's not what the verse says.
No.
I just wonder why Rabbi Yishmael transferred the idea from God to Moses. The only thing I could think of is the theological issue. That Rabbi Yishmael perhaps doesn't want the Midrash saying that God used God's finger to point out to Moses.
Uh-huh.
So
that sounds...
It's kind of like an educational, pedagogical thing. Rabbi Yishmael doesn't want to say God pointed with his finger. So he says that Moses, when he pointed out to the Jewish people. But again, the pshat of the verse is indeed that it is God speaking to Moshe.
You would say the Midrash isn't concerned about the pshat, maybe, right?
Well, I'm saying Rabbi Yishmael is concerned with the theological implications. But I can't be certain about that. In any case, that brings us now... okay, we've done all the questions. We did 8, 9, and 10. 10 is something we said earlier. what problem the verse might serve the justification for the midrash. That's what we said. The repetitiousness of the verse is ultimately the justification for understanding the first part of it in one fashion and only the second part of it in the original pshat of the first month of the year. Okay. Fine. Just one more Torah verse, which is the foundation of things we're going to talk about. We won't even see the Midrash on it, because it'll be so obvious to you, you don't need the Midrash. Look at Vayikra 23:1-2. Vayikra.
Oh, we read this yesterday.
Look at that, you're right. Oh, and you're reminding me I could have written my newspaper article about that. There's so much to write about. So, page 682. Page 682. Two verses at the beginning of Perek Chaf Gimel, 23. Vaydaber Adonai el Moshe Limor. Daber el Bnei Yisrael v'amarta lihem. Moadei Adonai asher tikra'u otam mikra'ei kodesh elehem mo'adai. So it says that these are the festivals of God, which you should declare them as festivals that are holy. These are my festivals. So the verse says, Asher tikra'u otam, you should declare them. And it's the same thing. They're God's festivals in the sense they depend upon the moon. But they're only festivals if we declare them. Just, and how do we declare them? Not by saying Pesach, Pesach. We declare them by Kiddush HaChodesh. Because the festivals are on certain days of the month. But when do the days of the month begin? That's the mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh. So this verse is just pointing out what we learned already, this dialectic, that God has festivals, God has a month, a moon, and it is set astronomically, but there's a mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh, HaChodesh HaZeh Lechem, you have to declare it, and here, Asher Tikra'u Otam, and the mitzvah of Tikra, to call the festival, is to declare the new month. Okay, so that's that. You can put that aside, even close the Chumash. And now I want to take 5 or 10 minutes to give the background to this mitzvah of Kiddush HaChodesh in an astronomical and in a halachic sense. So it begins with, I'm very bad in astronomy, so correct me. But it's about the conjunction, right, of the sun and the moon and the earth, right? When, I got it right? When the earth is right on a straight line between the moon and the sun on different sides of the earth. So the earth blocks the light of the sun from reaching the moon, and there's no moon at night.
Right.
As soon as the line is broken, which is called the conjunction, and there's a little bit of light that's reaching beyond the earth from the sun to the moon, you see what's called the molad. The molad, again, is the very first sliver of moon, which means a little light is coming from the sun and reflecting off of the moon. And if you remember, every month on the Shabbat before the new moon, we say that Gabai says the molad will be. And that's an astronomical calculation when you can actually see the very, 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 very first sliver.
I don't think that's right.
Uh-oh.
Okay. I think what you're talking about, when they're lined up, that's creating an eclipse. Okay? Every month we don't have an eclipse.
Right.
Every month what we have is we see the part of that's illuminated. So the angle that we're looking at, the moon, determines how much of that illuminated side we see.
Mm-hmm.
There's a dark side of the moon that is... The moon's.
Ah, I guess you're. Are you
the,
right?
The moon's rotation is basically synchronous with its rotation around the Earth. So there's a side that's always facing the sun, and there's a side that's always away. So and so
Makes sense.
So if the sun's here and we're here, my face is the earth.
Your face is the earth.
My face, and this is the sun. This is the moon. If it's there, I'm only going to see a little bit of the illumination.
If it's here,
I'm going to see a full moon. Okay. Yeah. If it's more over here, I'm not going to see any of it. I'm going to see a dark side of the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If it's between me, if the Earth is between,
that's the eclipse.
That's the eclipse.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know what? What you're saying makes sense. So what I'm saying,
that's the eclipse where the
perhaps
sun
I got it
out.
From
no the sun the sun
old
like that,
sources that believe it was like that.
That's right.
What I said, I didn't make up. But it sounds like you're right. It could be that the source I'm looking at are rabbinic sources from 2,000 years ago that understood it differently.
Uh-huh.
Very, very interesting point. Okay, thank you very much. I think that reminds me fourth grade. I think I learned this in fourth grade.
Well, the sun would be a factor, though, because you can't see...
No, of course the sun is a factor.
The sun is a factor in terms of seeing, being able to see the moon, right? But it's more dependent on the moon's rotation around the earth, you're saying.
Okay, so anyway, let's go on. So now, the cycle in which the moon comes back to being at any given point that we began at, how long is the cycle? 29 days. I have it exactly written down. 29 days, 12 hours, 44 minutes, 3 1/3 seconds.
Uh-huh. I'm not going to argue with that.
Okay. Yeah, I hope I'm right about this. So...
That sounds right.
Which you can clearly see the issue there. That if it was 29 days... Every month would be 29 days.
Right.
Was it 29 and a half? Every month would be either 29 or 30. Because a month can't be half. Can't be 29 and a half. But the problem is the 44 minutes and 3 1/3 seconds, which means that if you have 6 months with 29 days and 6 months with 30, you're going to have a certain problem there. It's going to be a certain adjustment once in a while. Now, just to tell us, and we'll create this related to reality that we have every month here at Shari Tefillah, like in every synagogue around the world that goes by tradition, we say in the Shabbat before the new moon, we say the Molad will be on a certain day, but then we don't say an hour in times we can understand. We talk about hours and halakim.
Uh-huh.
What are these halakim? So that's the halakim are the Jewish equivalent of minutes.
Uh-huh.
But they don't have the same amount of seconds as minutes have. What we're talking about is the following, that each hour, halakhically, each hour is divided into 1,080 parts. Not 60 minutes, but 1,080 parts, of which each is equivalent to 3 1/3 seconds. And you understand why it's 3 1/3 seconds, because that's going to make it easier to compute the cycle of the moon, because the cycle of the moon is 29 days, 12 hours, 44 minutes, and 3 1/3 seconds. So instead of dividing hours into 60 minutes, and each minute into seconds, we divided every hour into 1,800 parts. And each of those parts has 3 1/3 seconds. And those parts are called halakim.
That's what it is.
Yeah, because it makes the math work out.
1,080.
Yeah, 1,080.
Yeah. Okay, so anyway... let's talk now further about what it actually is that happens with the moon, with the direction of the moon. So we have this astronomical situation.
I like the measurement of life is based on a multiple of 18, by the way. I'm just throwing that out.
And I didn't realize it is 1,080 is a multiple of 18.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah.
Fine. You guys are quicker than I am for certain in that. Okay, so what we wanted to point out now. So there are 12 Jewish months in a year, but we're not talking about the years, we're talking about the months. Every month has 29 or 30 days. But it's not that we divided six like this and six like that, because like we said, every astronomical month is more than 29 and a half days.
Right.
But And how do we do it? We do it, we decide each month whether it is 29 or 30. We do it on the basis of ri'iyah, of sightings. This is the way it was done until the time of the grandson of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Rabbi Hillel is the grandson of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. So we're talking about the year 365 is when the calendar was fixed to go from Riyah to astronomical calculations that could be known Meirosh from the beginning. But before that, it was all done on the basis of sightings, whether it's going to be 29 and 30. The basic rule was that, let me make sure I got it right, that
some months are fixed, is that?
Wait a second, I had this written down, just let me remember. It's a five... Well, the way we have it fixed is five non-consecutive months are 29, five non-consecutive months are 30, and there are 2 months of the year that are variable.
Yeah.
That's how it was fixed. But before that, it was always open, depending on the Riyah. If the Riyah got it too much out of sync, the Hachamim would fix it. We'll talk about that a little in the coming days. Let's get some language here. A month that has 29 days is called in Hebrew chaser.
It's missing.
Missing.
Yeah.
A month that is 30 is called malay or mu'bar. Malay means full. Mu'bar means pregnant. 20 or 29 or 30. When we do our calculations, as we'll be talking, we'll always say the following. We'll say the 29th day of a month is always the 29th day of the month. But the 30th day of the month is questionable whether it's the 30th day of the month or the first of the next. And therefore, it's questionable whether the 31st day is the first of the month or the second.
Uh-huh, right.
That's our terminology to discuss what we're talking about. What else do I want to say to make sure we know what's going on? The monthly sightings I talked about. So how does it work? And the details of how it works, we're going to talk about in the Mishnah extensively. But basically, the Jewish people know when to look in the sky to see if there's going to be a black sky or a certain molad, a certain sliver.
That would be on the 20. That would be on the night of the 29th.
The night after the 29th. If we see a sliver, it's going to be the first. If we don't see a sliver, it's going to be the 30th. If we don't see a sliver and it's the 30th, then the next day is automatically
the first.
The first, because it can't be longer than that, the month. But if we do see a sliver, then we get on our donkey and we run to Jerusalem, to the Beit Din, to be one of the Edim that will come to the Beit Din and say, we saw the sliver. The judges will interrogate the witnesses. There might be 1,000 witnesses, there might be 3, you never know. And if the Beit Din finds 2 witnesses that they can rely upon, then the Beit Din will say Mikudash, Mikudash. If the Beit Din doesn't say Mikudash, Mikudash by the end of the 30th day, then it's not Mikudash. And it's the 30th, and then the next day is automatically Mikudash of itself.
They don't have to say, they would still
they don't have to don't say, have we'll to get into those details a little bit. And I think that's enough background now to go to the Mishnah.
Now, I learned some of this in the beginning of Sanhedrin.
Uh-huh, right, because the Sanhedrin deals with all this.
Yeah.
Right, and that's my question about, you know, how the structure of, I'm asking a question of the structure of Mishnah, because I saw it there, and I guess there they're trying to establish what makes a good witness.
Uh-huh.
And where else do you find this discussion? I mean,
these are the two places where these things are dealt with, Masechet Sanhedrin and Masechet Rosh Hashanah. And we'll see here that Masechet Rosh Hashanah deals with all the laws of witnesses vis-a-vis the moon, whereas Sanhedrin deals with it in a more general sense. If there are differences between the laws, which witnesses are kosher, which aren't, and there are some differences, we'll discuss that. So let's now go to the question sheet. Remember, we read through the Mishnah once, and we'll now go deeper. Right. So it says in Bet of our question sheet, what is the meaning of the word al with which the Mishnah begins? We talked about that, right? Concerning, the Mishnah said, al shisha chodeshim shluchim yotzim. Concerning, or because of, or for 6 months to the shluchim, do the messengers go out from the Beit Din to announce to the Jewish people around the world, mikudash, mikudash. Why did you think the shlichim would go forth for every month? That's a very interesting question I asked. Yeah. I'm not sure of the answer, by the way.
Maybe it's the tircha, it's a burden.
That's the only reason I can think of.
And it's not, there's not a major holiday or a major fast in that month.
No, right.
Yeah.
There are months when there's no need to know what day of the month it is. So the shlichim don't yotzim. But you would say, wait a second. Just because there's no major Jewish holiday, is that a reason not to know? Isn't it important for business documents? Isn't important? So the truth apparently is that it's not as important in those days as today, but there was some importance, but it was apparently a tircha. It was apparently simply a lot of money to arrange for all these shluchim to go to the far-flung corners of the Jewish community. Right?
That would be in Iraq probably, right? Iraq?
Someplace in Iraq.
Yeah.
Babylonia. Right? So they just didn't do it.
Spell tircha.
Oh, I'm sorry, tircha.
Tet yod resh het.
Tet resh het hey. It's a pain in the back. Question 3 we answered. Which Tanit is the Mishnah referring to? And we said Tisha B'Av, which means that all of the other Taniyot are not mentioned, which means that the Taniyot in other months, you don't know what day of the month to fast on.
Uh-huh.
The question is, did they fast? We'll have to talk about that.
Because all of them are mentioned in the Nah.
Which we're about to read that verse.
Right, okay.
So now it says, how is the phrase Al Elul Mipanei Rosh Hashanah different from every other similar phrase in the Mishnah? So we go back to the Mishnah, we read from the beginning, Al Shisha Chodeshim Hashluchim Yotzim, Al Nisan Mipanei HaPesach, Al Av Mipanei HaTanit, Al Elul Mipanei Rosh Hashanah. How is that statement, Al Elul Mipnei Rosh Hashanah, different from the two statements that preceded it? It's very different.
Yeah. I won't say.
It is reflexive on itself.
What do you mean?
Rosh Chodesh is, or in effect, Rosh Hashanah, which is Rosh Chodesh.
Think again. You trick yourself.
Oh, see?
It's not in that month.
It's the wrong month.
Right.
It should say Al Tishrei Mipnei Rosh Hashanah.
Well, hang on.
It's too late at that point.
No, because I can't find out about Rosh Hashanah at the last second like this. I need the only warning I can get would be Elul.
You okay. Can't about your guest for meals.
Okay, very good, very good. So now we're beginning to think about it. As far as Nisan.
Right.
When we know that it's Rosh Chodesh Nisan, either today or tomorrow, the shluchim go forth and they make it to the diaspora in time to tell people today is Pesach and not tomorrow. Fine.
Yeah.
Same thing with the Ta'anit. The Ta'anit is on the 9th of the month of Av. So when we have Rosh Chodesh Av, the shluchim yotzim, and they make it to the far corners of the diaspora within 8 days, right. And they make it, and I'm to the time to say the Ta'anit is today and not tomorrow. Rosh Hashanah, you have a problem. The minute it's Rosh Chodesh, it's already Rosh Hashanah. What do you do? So the Mishnah says that we have the Shluchim going forth the month before. Because, now let's think about this. If you know when Rosh Chodesh Elul is, you know when Rosh Hashanah is. Is that true?
Not really, because it
not
could
really.
Be 29 or 30. You get, it's at the night of the 29th, you don't know if it's Rosh Hashanah.
But if
you know, you don't know whether you should go to shul.
If you know the sum total of the number of days and the months that year,
no, there's no such thing. Everything is by sighting. You never know. You never know. Every month is a new ball game.
Was one of the ones where they always did 2 days.
Ah,
that's late.
Okay. So that might not be true. But the point is
that
if you let's think. If you don't know when Rosh Chodesh Elul is, and you also don't know when Rosh Chodesh Tishrei is, then as far as Rosh Hashanah goes, let's assume it's only one day, you have a double safek, a double doubt. You don't know when the previous month began, so you don't know at the end of the month of Elul, you don't know if it's the 28th or the 29th.
So you can fake yourself out.
And in addition to that, you don't know the month of Tishrei if it begins one day or the next day. So you have a double safek.
Like
so
a 4 days.
It's 3 days, I think. It's a 3 days.
Okay.
You have a 3 day safek as opposed to a 2 day safek. So we understand now that it's good to know when Rosh Chodesh Elul is to narrow the safek for Rosh Hashanah, to narrow it from 3 days to 2 days. But it's still a safek. It's still a safek when you get to the end of the month of Elul. At least you know what day of Elul is, but you still don't know how many days are going to be in Elul so as to know when the first day of Tishrei is. So Steve says...
Cuts it down to 2 days instead of three.
Cuts it down to two days instead of three by knowing Rosh Chodesh Elul. And then Steve says, perhaps they kept 2 days of Rosh Hashanah from time immemorial. Because as long as you're in the diaspora and you're not in Yerushalayim where the Beit Din declares a new month, you'll never know exactly when Rosh Hashanah is. So one of the sfarot, one of the approaches is like Steve said. It's like Steve said, it was always 2 days.
Even if you're in Yerushalayim at the
Beit Din, could be a certain problem. Let's not talk about that now. Another solution to the problem, if we don't accept Steve's solution, is that once we know Rosh Chodesh Elul and we've narrowed the safek from 3 days to 2 days, then as far as Rosh Hashanah, we keep it only 1 day. This is a different approach than Steve's. Keep it only 1 day. And we keep it based on the rove, on the majority of cases, which would more or less be that if Elul was 29 days, if Elul began on the 30th day of Av, which means that Av was Chaser, then Elul will be Malay. And we could assume when Rosh Hashanah is. And if it's the opposite, then it's the opposite.
Oh, is that always the way it works? That
It's not always. It's likely. Not,
but it's
except for 2 months.
But that's when
29.5
the calendar was set.
Right.
We're talking about a calendar that's not set. Oh. But a calendar that's not set, there's going to be a likelihood.
Likelihood.
And
it's
we'll talk later in the source about that likelihood.
90-some percent would be, I think.
They say even more than 90%. As we'll see. So anyway, there are two possibilities to deal with this problem of Rosh Hashanah. Either they always kept 2 days, or they kept 1 day on the basis of an assumption of how many days was going to be in the month of Elul based on how many days were in the month of Av.
Uh-huh.
That was 29, this is 30. If that was 30, this is 29. And we'll see those two possibilities in the literature. And those two possibilities will impact upon how to understand the next phrase in our Mishnah. It says, Al Tishrei Mipanei Takanat HaMoadot. The Shluchim go forth for Tishrei because of the fixing of the Moadot. And the Moadot obviously refers to Yom Kippur and Sukkot. Right, to know when they are. But now, does that phrase Takanat HaMoadot also include Rosh Hashanah?
I would say no.
Well, let's think of what Steve said. If you hold like Steve, that they always did 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, then there's no need for any type of further information to figure out when Rosh Hashanah is, because you do 2 days, everything is covered. But if you don't do 2 days, and you are keeping your Rosh Hashanah based on a certain assumption of when it probably is, then the Shluchim for Tishrei, if they get to where you are soon enough, if you're close enough, then they might just tell you you're keeping Rosh Hashanah on the wrong day.
Yeah.
They'll either tell you you missed it, they'll tell you right? So it could be...
Oh, they wouldn't say you missed it, probably, because you're going to keep it the 30th day of Elul.
No, that's not clear when you're going to keep it. Depends on how many days were in Av.
Okay. Okay. Okay, it's going to go after...
So anyway, so if you hold...
When did the Shluchim keep it?
They knew. So that's a very good question. Did the Shluchim go out on Rosh Hashanah? The answer is yes, as we'll see. But anyway, in other words, they weren't in davening.
I would think from the context, from the language, that it's not Rosh Hashanah because it clearly says Alelul Mipnei Rosh Hashanah. And I don't know if Rosh Hashanah is referred to as Moed.
Well, it is, because here, like, look in Vayikra 23 that we talked about just a few minutes ago. That includes Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur.
Okay.
So anyway, if we hold like Steve, that Rosh Hashanah, they always kept 2 days. Therefore, there's no need to hear anything from the Shluchim. Therefore, when it says, Al Tishrei Mipnei Takanat HaMoedot, it does not refer to Rosh Hashanah, but only to Yom Kippur and Sukkot. If you hold otherwise, that they kept Rosh Hashanah for only 1 day, out of a certain assumption, but without clarity, then it might be the Shluchim, if they got to you early enough, could actually tell you what to do about Rosh Hashanah also.
Yeah.
And therefore, the Takanat HaMoedot could include also Rosh Hashanah and not just Yom Kippur and Sukkot. Next.
How would that, explain to us again how that would help them if they only did Rosh Hashanah 1 day?
Well, let's say we only kept Rosh Hashanah 1 day.
And they missed it.
And I was keeping Rosh Hashanah on a certain day.
And the Shluchim
could come and tell me it's tomorrow.
Right.
So keep it a second day.
If it's the third.
Whereas usually don't keep a second day.
Yeah, but they wouldn't leave till the first of the month.
Yeah, but what happens if I'm only living 5 hours away? And they tell me.
Okay. I thought we were talking about 6.
The case would be you keep it on the 30th of Elul because you go according to Rov, and then they come back and they say, no, it's not.
It's tomorrow.
It's tomorrow, so you keep it on the second day.
Yeah, 6 hours is not going to get you very far. It's not even get you to
it could get me to Amman.
Yeah,
easily.
Right. Yeah, I'm not.
Were there Jews in Amman?
There were Jews living, perhaps not in Amman, but what is today Damascus? Aram Sova, which Haleb. There are certainly Jews, I think, living there.
The next Mishnah refers to Surya.
But you know,
there was some system where they did the fires.
Right, not yet. That came later. But just think of this: what about Jews living in Metula, or living in Beersheba?
Yeah, even today, it takes almost 6 hours to drive that by car.
Get a better car.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so take Jews living in Haifa. Jews living in Haifa. Right? The Shluchim, depending on, I don't know if they went on a horse or not, we have to check that out. If they went on a horse, they can get to Haifa within
6 hours?
Within 8 hours, 10 hours, I think. I'm guessing.
Yeah, I'm not next. It's not that far. It's 100 kilometers.
120. Okay. So we have Al Kislev Vipnei Chanukah, right? You have to know when Chanukah is. Valadar mipnei Purim, fine. And we said Kshaya Beit Mikdash Kayam. When there was a Beit Mikdash, you'd seem af Aliyar mipnei Pesach Katan. They have to know when Pesach Sheni is. So now we're going to look at some more questions in the Mishnah. Let me see, where are we? We talked about that. Question B7. It's an easy question. Which of the three pilgrimage festivals is missing from our Mishnah and why?
Pilgrimage.
Shavuot. And why?
It's dependent on Pesach.
Dependent on Pesach, you're right. Yeah. You count the Omer. It doesn't have to be any particular calendar day. And in these days, it was always a different calendar day.
Right.
It was either the 6th or the 7th of Sivan, depending on how many days were in the previous month, the month of Iyar.
So you had to keep count.
You had to keep count, right? If you didn't count the Omer right, you had Shavuot on the wrong day. Which is the exact idea of Svirat Omer, really to know when the holiday is. Question 8.
And one wouldn't say the bracha if you lost count. Because you could be potentially doing it
in vain. But what other special days are missing and why might they be missing?
The special days. Well, the minor fasts.
Minor fasts are missing.
Yeah,
right.
Like Tevet, Yud B'Tevet.
Which is Asara B'Tevet, the 10th of Tevet, and Yud Zayin
B'Tammuz
are missing.
We said it must be because of the Tircha, the trade-off between the Tircha and the importance of keeping.
But then it leaves the question: so what did they do with those fast days? And we'll talk about that right now. as we go to see Sefer Zechariah chapter 8 verse 19. Okay, so you know what? We won't look at it inside, but we'll see that it's quoted by some of the sources we're about to see. The book of Zechariah is written at the beginning of the return of the exiles from Babylon after the destruction of the first temple, about 70, 80, 90 years after the destruction. They're returning and about to begin building the Beit HaMikdash. And then the prophet says that the four fast days will turn into days of joy and gladness. And right. Let's see that verse as it's quoted in the Babylonian Talmud, tractate Rosh Hashanah, page 18a to B, with Rashi. So here we are. So I have it in order on our sheets, right? It's Talmud Bavli, Masechet Rosh Hashanah, Daf Yud Chet, Amud Aleph, and Amud Bet. Everyone see it?
No, is it?
The very first source after the Mechilta.
Okay, I see it, yeah.
Second, third, yeah. First place.
And it begins with the word Gemara, which means it's the first Gemara on our Mishnah. And it says, V'lifku nami a tamuz v'tevet. Lifku means to go forth. It's the Aramaic equivalent of the word in our Mishnah, yotzim, go forth. So it says the Gemara, let them go forth nami. What is nami?
Also.
Also, a, and on, for tamuz and tevet. Why for Tammuz? For the 17th of Tammuz.
Yom Tov Lecha.
And why for Tevet? For Asarah B'Tevet.
Asarah B'Tevet, yeah.
You hear what we're saying?
Yeah.
We asked, the Mishnah is having asked on it by the Gemara question, why don't we send Shluchim to tell us when we fast on the 17th of Tammuz and the 10th of Tevet? And the answer is, Damar Rav Hana Bar Bizna, Amar Rav Shimon Hasida. Right, all these, one rabbi says the name of another rabbi. My dichtiv, what does it say in the book of Zechariah, chapter 8, which is the verse we're looking for? Ko amar Hashem tzvakot, tzom harivii, v'tzom hachamishi, v'tzom hashvii, v'tzom hasiri yihyeh, levet Yehuda l'sason u'lesimcha. So the prophet says that the tzom of the fourth month, and think, what's the fourth month after Nisan?
It's Av.
Is it Av?
No, I'm sorry, that's Tammuz.
Tammuz,
yeah.
So the Tzom of the Revi is Tammuz, and the Tzom of the Chamishi, which is the next month, Av. Right? And the Tzom of the Shvi'i,
Gedalia.
That's Tzom Gedalia, right? And the Tzom of the Asiri, that's the month of Tevet. Yeah, Levet Yisrael, I'm sorry, Levet Yudah, the Sason, the Simcha, they'll be for joy and gladness. In other words, they celebrated these four Tzomot at the destruction of the second temple, first temple. But the prophet says, now that we're going back to Eretz Yisrael, there's not going to be any Tzomot anymore. That's a possible answer to our question. Why didn't the Shluchim go out for these Tzomot? Because if you say that this Mishnah reflects reality during the Second Temple period, there weren't any Tzomot.
But they did go, the Mishnah says they went out in the Chamishi.
Then why does the Mishnah say that they did go out for the Tanit, which we said was Tanit
Tisha B'Av.
Tisha B'Av. So now we have a problem. Let's read the Gemara further. Says the Gemara on the verse.
Destruction.
Say it again?
This is talking about the second destruction, after the second destruction.
Which is?
The Mishnah.
Well, that's our question. Is the Mishnah talking about after destruction of the second temple or before?
Well, it is. The last line surely is.
Very good point. Steve says, look at the last line of the Mishnah.
Okay.
Right? It says, last line of the Mishnah says, Ukshahaya. We're going back to the Mishnah.
Ukshahaya.
Martin.
Yeah.
Just to make sure you're with us?
Yeah.
Okay. Ukshaya, Beit Mikdash Kayam, when the Mikdash existed, etc. So you see that the Mishnah must be talking about after the destruction, because it says when the Mikdash used to exist. So the Mishnah seems to be talking about after destruction, but I can counter Steve and say, no, that the body of the Mishnah was written before the destruction. And the original Mishnah said something different. The Mishnah had ER for Pesach Shemi as part of it. But after the temple was destroyed, they reworded the Mishnah. You can always say that.
Sure.
And they left in it the lack of shluchim for these other tzumot. But anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. Let's go. Yeah. Let's go back to the Gemara and understand. So remember, the Gemara asked, why don't we send shluchim for the fast of Tammuz and the fast of Tevet? Okay. And the answer it gives is, look at the verse in Zechariah. And now the Gemara explains the verse. It's the second word of the third line. Kari lahu tzom, v'kari lahu sason v'simcha. The verse calls these days tzom, fast, and also calls them happiness and joy.
Yeah.
Bizman sheh shalom, yula sason v'simcha. When the Jewish people have peace, and a different interpretation of what that means exactly, then these days become happiness and joy. Ein shalom, when the Jewish people don't have shalom, they become tzom. So apparently what it's trying to say is that the reason shluchim didn't go out is because the Mishnah is referring to a period in time when the Jewish people had shalom, which apparently is before the destruction of the temple, and these days weren't tzomot.
You mean this during the second temple?
During the second temple.
Yeah.
That's what it seems to be saying. Let's read further. Amara Papa. Of course, that leaves us the question. So why does the Mishnah mention shluchim for
Tanit,
the Tanit of Tisha B'Av?
There's another source where the Navi asks Hashem whether he should fast or not.
Right. Wait a second. Amara Papa. Hachi Ka'amar. Says Rav Papa, thusly it means, Bizman Sheh Shalom, Yeyu L'Son V'Simcha, Yeshmad Tzom. Ein shmad v'ein shalom, ratsu mitanim, ratsu ein mitanim. So Rav Papa explains, just a slight difference. He says it's not two categories, it's three categories. It's not just if there's peace or not. He says, if there's peace, then these days are happiness and joy. If there's shmad, which means real religious persecution, no peace, then there's tzom. And if there's ein shmad v'ein shalom, if we're in a middle time, when you're really not sure if things are good or bad for the Jews, then ratsu, if the Jewish people want, mitanim, we make a fast.
Optional fast.
In ratsu, well, not exactly, I'll explain.
Okay.
Ratsu, if they want, ein mitanim, we don't make a fast. In other words, but it's not necessarily optional. It's that the Jewish people decide, and they always have the option of deciding by custom, do we fast or not fast?
As a whole.
Ratsu is
what?
Wanted.
You mean the Jewish people as a whole decide collectively, not...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So who is Jewish people? Is that the Sanhedrin?
That's a good question. But let's not do that now. But anyway, again, the usage that the Gemara is putting this idea to apparently is to say that the Mishnah is talking about a period which we didn't keep these tzumot, either because it was a period of peace, or because it was a period of half peace, half not. The Jewish people decided not to fast. That's why there's no shluchim. But then the Gemara asks the obvious question. Ihachi, right? The 1, 2, 3, 4, 5th, 6th word of the second to last line. Ihachi, if so, Tisha B'Av Nami. Tisha B'Av also we shouldn't be fasting. What does the Mishnah say? That we fast on Tisha B'Av, but not on the other days. Are you still with me?
Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
Because back there,
the Mishnah says we do send out the messengers for Tisha B'Av, but not for the other fasts. So why did the singers with different fasts? The prophet Zechariah put all four fasts in the same boat.
Okay, so it's the blue boat.
And the answer is Amara Papa, shiny Tisha B'Av ho'il b'huk palu boat sarot. Different is Tisha B'Av since we're doubled on it the tribulations. In other words, he's saying that as far as Tisha B'Av goes, there, if the Jewish people in a period of half peace, half not peace, it's not that we decide if we want to fast or not. You have to fast. Tisha B'Av is different than all the others. If it's a period of total peace, then the Navi says it becomes a day of joy, rejoicing. But if it's a period of kacha kacha, then the Jewish people don't make the decision. The other fast days, they can decide not to fast. But as far as Tisha B'Av, it's just too serious a thing.
So contemporaneously.
Oh, wait a second. Just let's finish the idea.
Okay.
I understand that there's a lot to talk about. Damarav, Betisha B'Av, Harav Habayit Barishunav Shniya. As Rav said, on Tisha B'Av, the first temple and the second were destroyed. Benil Kada Beitar, and was captured Beitar at the end of the Bar Kokhba revolt. Benichrasha Ha'ir, and the city of Jerusalem was plowed over by the Romans. Not only was it destroyed on this day by the Romans, but later, a few years later, was plowed under and completely and absolutely made as if it didn't exist. I want to think about this a second before we get to Martin's question. Okay? Think about this. These destructions that happened on Tisha B'Av happened after the destruction of the Second Temple. To list first and second, and the Bar Kokhba revolt, and the plowing over of the city. So they're talking about after the Second Temple is destroyed. They seem to be saying that after the Second Temple is destroyed, we keep Tisha B'Av, but we don't necessarily keep the other fasts. Now that's kind of interesting. The Second Temple is destroyed. Jewish sovereignty is gone. But still, we're being told, I think, if I'm reading it right, that we're being told that Tisha B'Av you have to keep. The other fasts, the Jewish people can decide. And the Mishnah reflects the reality
but isn't that
of after the destruction of the Second Temple. But they still didn't keep the other fasts because it was a period of half bad, half good, and Jewish people can decide. It wasn't totally bad.
But that's Bismansha. That's during the time of the first temple.
No,
it's not?
It says okay. Nilkadat Beitar. Beitar was destroyed. So we're talking about the year 135. Now we're trying to...
Yeah, Tisha B'Av, in terms of Tisha... Shani Tisha B'Av, Ho'il, and then it gives the reasons. But
again, what was the question? The question was, why does the Mishnah not mention the other fasts, but it does mention Tisha B'Av?
Right.
The answer is, the other fasts, the Jewish people decide not to fast. Tisha B'Av, we have to fast because we've had all these other tzarot. Tzarot of after the destruction of the Second Temple. So it seems to be saying that even after the Second Temple is destroyed, there might have been periods that are good enough that you don't have to fast on Yud Zayin B'Tammuz and on Asara B'Tevet and even on Tzom Gedaliah.
It's optimistic.
And I don't know for certain what Martin was going to ask, but if Martin was going to ask, then why do we fast today? Because today the times are certainly better than they were after Beitar was destroyed.
That's basically where we were going.
So it's actually a complicated question, and there are rabbinic authorities that we shouldn't fast today.
There are.
Yes, they're in the minority. Yeah. I'm talking about theoretical opinions. There are no rabbis that say today you shouldn't fast. But in the theoretical discussions, many rabbis point out that indeed, according to the literature that we have in front of us, comparing, applying to today's times with the state of Israel, etc., it might very well
Hartman
be.
Hartman said that, I think. Rabbi Hartman?
I don't remember details. You could be right.
Yeah, he's talked about Tisha B'Av, I think, in that context.
And remember that, and even if we do fast, it's nothing but a ratzu, the Jewish people's decision.
Yeah.
Right? It's not a halakha.
Well, it's a custom again.
Which could explain why we're mekel when it comes to a lot of things. We're mekel about, you know, pregnant women, things like
right.
women pregnant.
There was another half to my question. The other half to my question is the timing of Tisha B'Av, the timing of editing these Mishnayot and the Sfarim, and the severity of the events, of the destruction of the temples, the nearness of those events, having an impact on this kind of statement. That is, where was that again? Okay. Basically saying the severity of Tisha B'Av is so high because it was so soon, so contemporaneous.
No, it doesn't say that though.
That's what I'm asking.
It says because of the many things that happened on that day.
Hukbalu doesn't mean double, it means quadruple.
Right, whereas the other fast days, there's only one bad thing that happened that day. So they're not so bad.
There's another case from the Navi where he asks Hashem
whether
we should fast.
I think it's Zachariah also.
Zachariah, where Hashem's answer is, if you want to fast, but I don't really want... what's important for me is tzaddik and mishpat and things like that. So it makes it sound like Tisha B'Av in that context is ratzu.
Uh-huh.
That's what I think from the... In other words, it's the people...
I could be that Tisha B'Av is ratzu, but it's... It is more reason there.
Yeah. Well, during the time the temple is standing.
So now I want to go one step further. If we've read according to the Gemara that the Mishnah is talking about the time of after the destruction of the temple. And even though it's after that time, we don't keep the other fasts, but we do keep the Ta'anit of Tisha B'Av, then does that tell us anything about what the situation was with Tisha B'Av before the destruction of the temple?
That's my point.
So that's a machloket between the Mifrashim, and we're going to read those Mifrashim.
Before the destruction of the first.
No, before the destruction of the second. Of the second.
Philosophically, you could say there was a difference even before the destruction of the first temple that you know, because you could go back, there are other...
Then there was no Tisha B'Av for certain.
Well, there was still a Tisha B'Av. There was still a
there
day.
There wasn't a fast.
There was
still a day in the calendar. Yeah,
well, yeah, and people have, you know, attributed other bad things that have
been... That's true.
Okay, so you could say one of the reasons why there's a distinction between these days is that there's something...
The miracle.
There's something intrinsically bad about that date on the calendar.
Right.
The others are historical markers, possibly. Yeah. You know, the Romans came in at this day.
That's right. The Midrash may support that because
right.
The Midrash attributes
you could say that.
The Midrash attributes that to the Meraglim.
Right. You can say that. But remember, the Midrash also attributes other things to Yudzayim B'Tammuz.
Yeah, that's true. The breaking of the Luchot,
So anyway, let's see now this machloket between Rashi and the Rambam.
But before we do that, real quick, while we're still just talking about, because it's kind of a philosophical thing, but what is the root of Shluchim?
The root of the word?
Yes.
Shin?
Yes.
Lamed?
Yes.
Chet?
Okay.
To send.
Okay, then that throws my thing out of order. Because I was saying...
Wait a second. Don't tell us. If it's wrong, don't tell us.
Okay, well, it contains the word high. Okay, and there was I was seeing that these people...
No, it works. Huh? I'm going to cut you off.
Yeah. I know it doesn't because... what?
I said I'm going to cut you off.
Okay.
I'm going to see the machlok between Rashi and the Rambam, which is photostated right underneath the Gemara we just read. This is Rashi on Masechet Rosh Hashanah, Daf Yud Chet Amud Bet. It's Rashi on this Gemara we just read. It says Rashi, Damar Rav Hama Bar Bizna. Right? Rashi is commenting on the first line of the Gemara. He says, Dekulhu Yemei Tanit Ninhu Bizman Hazeh She'ein Beit HaMikdash Kayam Matnitin Bizman Hazeh Kamairi Midekatani Ukshe Mikdash Kayam. So let's read it word by word. He says that Dekulhu Yemei Tanit Ninhu Bizman Hazeh, that all of the days of the fasts that are Bizman Hazeh, at this time, Shein Beit HaMikdash Kayam, when there's no Beit HaMikdash.
Does he mean Rashi's time or Rav his?
No, he doesn't mean his own time. He means the time that they're talking about in the Gemara.
Right.
Umatnitin Bizman Hazeh Kamairi. And the Mishnah is talking about this time when there's no Beit HaMikdash. Umidekatani Uksha Mikdash Kayam v'chule, and that's proven from the end of the Mishnah that says, and when the Beit Mikdash used to be.
Right.
That proves that it's written in a time when there is no Beit Mikdash, like Steve had said.
Yeah.
So Rashi is just saying that the Gemara is talking about a time when there's no Beit Mikdash. Which is everything we said. Seems to be right. Which means that when it says that the Shluchim go out for Tisha B'Av, it's talking about after the destruction of the temple. What was before the temple was destroyed, we don't know. Was there a Tisha B'Av or not? We don't know if there was a Tisha B'Av or not. That's all I wanted to prove from here. We don't know if there was a celebration, a fasting on Tisha B'Av.
So that's what
according to Rashi.
That's what Rashi is acknowledging indirectly?
That's what I'm bringing Rashi for.
Okay. And then Rambam is going
to
say...
But the Rambam seems to be saying something else. And the Rambam says, Ubabayit sheni lo hayu mit'anim lo ba'asiri b'tevet lo v'shivasa b'tamuz. says the Rambam, at the time of the Bayit Sheni, he's talking about a different time we've been talking. He's talking about during the time of the temple, they didn't fast on the 10th of Tevet and not on the 17th of Tammuz. Ela harotzei yitaneh, o shalo yitaneh. He who wants will fast or not. And it was open.
For every individual to decide?
I don't know. That's okay. A different question. But what I'm pointing out is that what the Gemara had said, if they want, if they don't want, the Rambam is applying to the time of the temple, whereas Rashi says the whole Gemara was talking about after the destruction of the temple. Second line of the Rambam. Ulefichach lo hayu yotzim al Tevet v'al Tammuz. And that's why the Shluchim didn't go out on Tevet and Tammuz. But the Rambam is focusing the Mishnah on before the destruction. Amar Hashem, ko amar Adonai, I shouldn't have said Hashem's name, Tzoma Revi, Tzoma Chamishi, Tzoma Shvi, Tzoma Asi, v'chul. And he brings the verse that says that these days will become as happiness and joy. Kilu natana bichira biadam, as if God gave the choice into our hands. Be'elu
hayamim.
Right, that's a misprint.
Yeah.
Can I use a pen just to fix it?
Pencil.
By the way, that's not my misprint. That's the computer program.
Bar Ilan.
Yeah.
So which one was the typo?
The middle of the third line. It says hamayim, and it should be hayamim. Be'elu hayamim. So the choice was given over to our hands on these days if we want to fast or if we don't want to fast. But Soma Revi'i Hu Shiva Sarba Tammuz, and he says in the fast of the fourth month, in the way days, in the words of the prophet, that means the Shiva Sarba Tammuz, 17th of Tammuz. Vishu Tammuz or Chodesh HaRevi, because Tammuz is the fourth month. V'tzom HaChamishi, and the tzom of the fifth month, in the words of the prophet, that's Tisha B'Av, Shu B'Chodesh HaChamishi, which is in the fifth month. V'tzom HaShvi, Tzom Gedalia, and the seventh, the fast of the seventh month is Tzom Gedalia. V'tzom HaSiri, Asir B'Tevet. And what's called, in the words of the prophet, the fast of the tenth, is the tenth day of Tevet. Tevet is the tenth month. V'fishu B'Chodesh HaSiri. Now get this. Vayu mit'anim Tisha B'Av, and they used to fast on Tisha B'Av. Afal pi shehu masur l'tzonam, even though it's given over to their own decision, shukpalu bo tzarot, because there were many, many tzarot on that day, kamo shitba'er b'taniyot, as is explained in Tractate Tanit. Now, why does the Rambam say, as is explained in Tractate Tanit? Why doesn't he say, as is explained in the Gemara, that used those words, that we fast on Tisha B'Av because there were many tzarot on that day? And it says, because the Beit Rishon and Sheni were destroyed, and because Beitar was captured, and because the city was plowed under. Why doesn't the Rambam just say, as explained in the Gemara? What does it say as explained in Masechet Tanit?
Because he's talking about when the temple was standing.
Because he's talking about when the temple was standing,
right.
And he doesn't want to therefore use the tzarot mentioned in the Gemara, because they're tzarot after. So the Rambam says, I mean the Mishnah, the end of Tractate Tanit, that talks about all the biblical things that happened on that day, as some of you mentioned earlier. What are they? That the Luchot,
the
spies.
The Midrash talks about the spies. God, Hashem says, I'll give you something to cry about. That's Tisha B'Av, and then the Luchot.
Yeah.
When he came down.
So the Rambam, so it goes like this. If we read the Gemara like Rashi, that it's talking about after the destruction, well, that makes sense, because Rav mentioned all these things that happened after the destruction. But it comes to the conclusion, according to Rashi, that even during the time of Galut, they still didn't fast on the minor fast days. The Rambam is disturbed by that conclusion, because the Rambam assumes if we're in Galut, then of course we fast on the minor fast days. It's no longer a time of Simcha. So the Rambam understands that the whole thing is talking about, the whole Gemara is talking about, before the destruction. So if it's talking about before the destruction, then it's telling us that they fasted on Tisha B'Av before the destruction. Why? Because there's other things that happened on those days, even though the temple is not destroyed yet.
That's exactly
right. So again, what we've come to is a machloket, a historical machloket in a certain sense. During the time of the Second Temple, did they fast on Tisha B'Av or did they not? From Rambam, the answer is yes. From Rashi, it could be the answer is no. And what we're going to do now is we're going to read the newspapers from the Second Temple period.
Oh, Josephus.
Read Josephus 5, you see what they did.
It comes back to, I like the question, is the contemporaneous event impacting writings these...
So Josephus Flavius. So Josephus says, and of course he is a Jewish general in the war against Rome that surrendered and became a historian for the Roman armies and later went back to Rome and wrote books for the Roman Empire.
In Latin.
In Latin.
Greek.
Latin. In Greek, I'm sorry, in Greek. And he wrote in English translation this, and he's describing the destruction of the Second Temple. The city was taken on the third month, on the day of the fast, upon the 179th Olympiad, when Caius Antonius and Marcus Tullius Cicero were consuls, and the enemy then fell upon them, fell upon the Jews, and cut the throats of those that were in the temple. And he says the same thing in a different place. This destruction befell the city of Jerusalem. Marcus Agrippus and Canius Gallus were periodical revolution of calamities returned since they had befell the Jews unto Pompey, etc., etc., etc.
The third month?
I can't believe it. I quoted the wrong quote. I didn't mention the fast here. Okay, that has to be fixed. In any case, let's just take the first quote of Josephus. He says the temple was destroyed on the day of the fast.
So the fast is already in effect.
Apparently, he assumes that there was a fast that had been going on. That
right.
was a day that was known as a fast day.
Otherwise, he wouldn't say the day
unless
of the fast.
Unless he wrote this years later.
Right, he did. So it could be, like you're saying, he wrote it years later. But at least some historians learned from Josephus that we can learn from Josephus that there was a fast day, and even though it says the third month here, and you say, wait a second, Tisha B'Av is not in the third month, but Josephus is working the base of a Greek calendar, of a Roman calendar, and historians have pointed out which calendar it is. I don't understand that stuff, I don't know the calendars, but he's talking about, at least according to some historians, Tisha B'Av, and it's designated as a fast day, could be, even when the temple was in the process of being destroyed. Okay. So I have to fix that.
The Julian
calendar. Can I...
No, you don't want to use an eraser.
Okay. Fix that. So I think we're going to end here, because even though I have more sources that we can see that I prepared, as you know, I'm planning to go to this consecration of the Beit Farot, so I'm going to take off.